Ladies and gentlemen of the Lightweights Podcast, welcome to the great episode with Wells Adams.
What's up?
Thanks for being here.
Of course. Why is it called the Lightweights? Because I feel like, okay, this is my perception of it, okay? So I feel like if you had heavyweights, it would be like A-list, like Jen Aniston, DiCaprio. And the Lightweights are like, all right, let's get like people who are on the fringe of celebrity.
No.
Okay.
It's because I can't handle my alcohol.
Oh,
okay. I black out real quick.
Do you still drink?
No, I'm for occasion.
Yeah.
But it's like a 3-day event because I have to drink and then recover and then recover a second day.
Yeah.
So it's just, I try not to.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a good event.
I know. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I'm a cheap drunk. But I'm a really, here's the problem. I might have an actual like drinking issue, but I'm such a fun and happy drunk that no one's ever been like, dude, you need to cool it.
Yeah.
And even times when I do black out, I'll be like to my wife, I'll be like, was I bad? And she'll be like, you're the life of the party. Everyone loves you. Like, you have nothing to be nervous about.
You make new friends. Yes. Then you find out the next day, you're like, who did I talk to?
Yeah, like, I have no recollection of that person.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. So here's the thing. This is what I do. I grant myself, like, one night a week of, like, I can go out and, like, have a couple glasses. Other than that, like, I try to keep it cool.
Oh, I need to do that.
Which is ironic because my job is to get people drunk on a TV show.
A bartender. Yeah. We have a lot in common as well.
Okay.
You met your wife through Instagram DMs, correct?
Yeah.
So did I.
Really?
You asked for the family's blessing. So did I.
Nice.
That's common. You got married on August 20th, 2022.
Yeah.
I got married August 20th, 2023.
Really?
1 year apart.
Wow, we have the same anniversary.
Did you just celebrate your anniversary?
Yeah.
What did you guys do?
We actually didn't. I mean, we did and we didn't. She was in Fiji filming Love Island, and I wasn't there. Like, I came out and visited her, like, the first week of the show. No. She did two stints. So, like, the second stint when she went back, I was there the first week of it. So I had to come back home for, like, other stuff, and yeah, we were not together on our anniversary. But she's made some cockamamie plan that we're going to have our anniversary now in October because that was like our deciding to be boyfriend-girlfriend anniversary. So I still got to get like a gift and do like romantic stuff.
Do you have an idea of what you're going to do?
Well, the first one's paper.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I got to get into that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good way of – I like that paper – is the first one because it's like, we know you're broke. So write a letter, you know, like
something heartfelt.
Yeah. And like, we're not broke, but like that wedding killed us. Like, we will never financially recover from that thing. So I was thinking, like, there was a time which I was like, maybe like a signed first edition of a book or like, you know, something really cool like that.
Yeah.
But those are expensive. I've come to find that that's also expensive.
Yeah, I had a Harry Potter first edition that my dad gave me. And at the end of high school, and the summer came, I left it in my locker because like, I don't read anyway. And the janitor took it. He went back to the school to try and get it. Can't find it anymore. So I have to try and buy him a new one. Costs a fortune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That janitor no longer works there. He's now
living off that book sale.
He's now in Boca Vista, living high in the hog. You know, speaking of that, Sarah's dad, Ed, who's an actor, a great one at that, is Dumbledore on Broadway.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in The Cursed Child. Which, if you haven't seen that, go, like, run, don't walk. It's so freaking good.
Yeah. Are you a big Broadway guy?
I wasn't until... I'm like, it's like sexually transmitted Broadway guy now because my wife like started in Broadway and so she loves it so much. And I like, you know, I was a radio host and so that meant I went to a lot of shows, a lot of concerts and stuff. And I was a big music guy. But I do love the act of performing in front of people. The tangible experience of seeing someone create art is very, very cool to me. More so than like watching something on TV or watching a movie, because like that happened years ago and it's been cut and, you know, snipped to shreds, and seeing someone have to do it in front of you, I think is is a more beautiful and like almost like a religious experience. But anyways, her dad is Dumbledore. He plays a couple different roles. He plays Cedric Diggory's dad, which is actually a more important role, which is a weird thing to say when it comes to Harry Potter. But it's so cool because obviously there's a lot of magic. And so on stage, you get to do a lot of stage magic, which is so cool. Because that's how, you know, whenever you see magic, you know, you see watch Harry Potter on film, you're like, okay, it's CGI or whatnot. But like seeing it done in front of you, like people disappearing and like, you know, optical illusions and stuff, you're like, oh, how do they do that?
That must be a cool one to see live.
It's a beautiful show. Yeah. Seriously, go see it.
So speaking of the art, you transitioned from radio DJ directly to a cast member on a reality show.
Yeah, I continued being a radio host even after I went on the reality show.
Was that hard from going inside a booth to performing in front of, not performing, but being in front of cameras trying to put yourself out there?
Not really. I had a leg up, I think, in comparison to everybody else because I lived this world of constantly self-editing. You know, like I was always worried, you know, when I was doing my radio shows that the FCC would come in and say, like, you said, like, X, Y, and Z, you know? So I was always super nervous about getting fired, really. So going on a show where you, like, you really have to worry about what you say and how you say it and how it's going to be perceived, for me, I was like, this is easy. Like, especially when you have to go into what we call ITMs or in-the-moment interviews. Like, it was very easy for me to kind of explain how I felt and what was going on, knowing also a little bit of like, I think the storyline is that guy's the bad guy, so do I want to be the guy that piles onto that guy? Probably not. Like, and I think it, pretty early on in my experience on The Bachelorette, they realized that I was good at storytelling, and that I think probably was the catalyst to ease me into my current position, which is advice giver, bartender, therapist, and like storyteller, really.
Right.
But yeah, no, it was really easy. It was really easy for me. The thing that was hard for me was being intimate on camera, because there are a lot of you. It doesn't look this way when you watch the show, but like, you know, you're with the girl, and you're trying to be romantic, and you're trying to say like, you know, cool things, and but there's also like two sound guys and like, you know, a camera person and like a camera AD and, you know, like, and a producer, and there's people watching you. It's a very weird thing, which is not something when you are being romantic, that's usually a solitary thing. Well, there's one other person there, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, some nights are lonely, so. But yeah, so it's a weird thing of having people watch, and then it's a weird thing of like, how's this going to look? Like, am I a bad kisser? Like, you know, weird stuff like that. Where to put my hands? What's appropriate, you know?
Because you also went from being audio only to now there's a visual that's going to be living on forever to be judged by millions.
Yeah.
Was that playing in your head during all of those tapings?
Yeah, I think so. I was really, really timid with like really saying what I thought in the beginning. Just because I knew I didn't want to be, like, edited in a certain way. And when you first go into reality TV, you know, a lot of the things that people say is, watch out, they can make you look however they want to make you look. And I have found over, you know, 9 seasons of doing this, that's not really true. You can't make something out of nothing. And the truth of the matter is that usually people who say they got a bad edit on reality TV just don't really know who they are. They usually are kind of an asshole. They just haven't come to terms with it yet. Whereas I kind of knew who I was. I was a relatively older person coming into that show. I was in my 30s at that point. I had a career. I was proud of the work I had done. I knew what I wanted and what I didn't. I had like a very good, strong, self-belief in who I was. And it was interesting when I go back and watch those shows, or even when I watched it when it was airing originally, I remember thinking like, this person's just really immature. They haven't lived enough life to like know who they are, and so they're trying to be and pretend to be something that they think they should be, but that just comes off as inauthentic, and like the audience can smell that from a mile away. And usually inauthenticity really just comes out in terms of the audience perception of it as full of shit, asshole, which is not really true, but that's how people perceive it. So that's one weird piece of advice, because I get this a lot. Like, people will come up to me at a bar or restaurant and be like, you know, my sister or my brother really wants to go on that show or go on a show like that. Like, what's your big piece of advice? And I'm always like, I really just know who you are and really be comfortable in your skin, because that's what's going to be exposed. Obviously, will it be like exaggerated? Yeah, sure. It's a television show. But at the end of the day, it will be you. For me, I was comfortable with who I was, so I never really had a problem with filming. It was, honestly, in the back of my head was, am I a weird-looking kisser? Because you don't really know how you look. I've never, like, filmed myself, never made a sex tape or something, like, know how, like, I kiss, you know? And I remember being like, am I, like, going to be, like, a sloppy, gross, weird kisser? Am I, like, sucking on a lip too long? Like, are my hands not in the right places? That's the anxiety that I had.
Yeah. Do you think the way that you carried yourself on that landed you the bartender role in Bachelor in Paradise, because you were so, like you said, you gave out like good advice. So how did that transition you into that role?
Well, it's a little bit different than, they weren't like, look at this guy, he needs to be the bartender. It really came down to, so I assume it's still like this, but when you go on the show, if you get a rose before the rose ceremony, because you'll go on dates and like they'll give you roses, right? Which means you're safe until like the next week. So I went on the first group date, and I got the first rose. I got the first rose of the season. Well, Jordan, he got the first impression rose, and then I got the second rose. And then my buddy Derek, he went on the first one-on-one and got a rose. So it was us three dudes who were kind of clear until the next week. When you have a rose, it's so ridiculous to say this out loud, but when you have a rose, they don't care about you. You're not a storyline anymore, because you're fine until next week.
The camera people, like the
producers. Production. Yeah. They're like, you guys are fine. We're not focusing on you guys. So, and of course, everyone else is like, you know, like, I got to get time with her, and I got to, she guys needs to know who I am. I got to get this rose at the rose ceremony. And we're like, fuck it. We're good. Like, we have nothing to worry about. So I started doing this thing where I started making drinks. I was like, loved old fashioned. I still love old fashions. It's my drink. So I'd make drinks. And so I remember Derek came back from his one-on-one and had a rose. And I was like, all right, I've been doing this for the last couple of days. No one's paying attention to us. So let's get drunk. So I started making drinks for him. And then I started making drinks for Jordan. And it was just like our little, I was just bartending for like us three. And then it became a funny thing of, if you got a rose before rose ceremony, Wells had to make you a drink. So then it started becoming a thing where people wanted to get the rose so they could eventually get engaged to JoJo. But people were also saying, I want to get this rose because I want to have Wells get me drunk. So then it became this weird thing. I think production was like, what's happening over here? Like, we're not filming it, but like everyone wants Wells to make him a drink. And then of course we'd sit down and have real conversations because cameras weren't on us. Now, were cameras on us? Of course, because there's cameras everywhere, but we didn't know that. And so we would really relax and have like really meaningful conversations, not even about the girl we were dating, just about life and, you know, religion and death and all that kind of stuff that you do when you get drunk with somebody. And I think that was the thing that made them be like, okay, this might be a good, he might be good at this thing. Now, at the time, in Bachelor in Paradise, there was a bartender there. He was just an employee of the resort. And his name is Jorge, and he's a wonderful guy.
Oh, he wasn't part of the show?
No, not at all. He just was a bartender there. And so I went on the show as a cast member, BIP3. I came kind of late, so I met Jorge and everything. And the problem that he had, he's a wonderful man, his English is like a little off, right? Like it's not his first language. So it was hard for him. He was pretty good at communicating, but he wasn't like really good at like understanding what people were crying about and everything. And so the season after that, he like left the resort. Like he was no longer working there. He started his own tourism company, which you can actually still do in Sayulita to this day. He's an awesome guy. And so when he left the show, I think they were like, this is a good opportunity for us to have someone that can like really talk to these people. And then the leg up that I have is that I was actually part of the show. Like I understand more so than really anybody, like the trepidation and the fears that you have of like going on that experience, you know? And so I think that's how it like originally started.
Are you working a full shift?
Yeah, I work a lot. It's like one thing that people don't really realize. They think that someone else makes the drinks and then I'm just like a figure.
Sometimes it could be hard eating healthy when you're feeling like you're giving up flavor or fun. That's where I have a food hack for you. Washington Red Raspberries are a clean, simple, and seriously delicious way to add more nutrition to your day. They're American grown, picked at peak ripeness, and frozen within hours to lock in nutrients like fiber, antioxidants, and vitamin C. And they have no added sugar, just fruit. As nature intended. I try to get my fruit in all fun ways, whether it's a smoothie, a salad, it's really just a treat. Frozen Washington Red Raspberries are one of the best kept secrets in the freezer aisle. They're naturally low in sugar, high in fiber, and support gut health, blood sugar balance, and overall wellness. And because they're frozen at the peak of ripeness, they deliver big time nutrition and flavor year round. So whether you're trying to clean up your snacks or build better meals, these berries are a total win. You can find frozen Washington Red Raspberries in the frozen fruit section of most major grocery retailers. And Costco. If you want to discover new ways to use American frozen red raspberries, get more details on where you can grab them simply by going to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. You'll find recipes, health tips, retail locations, and everything you need to make Washington Red Raspberries a regular part of your routine. Look for product of the U.S. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is simple. Fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. I do have a few friends who have used GLP-1, and it helps get them on the right path to sustain a healthier lifestyle. It's helped with weight loss and confidence. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game right now, my listeners can get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with my code LIGHTWEIGHT at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use code LIGHTWEIGHT to get $50 off your first month of GLP weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. Get started today. We all want to feel our best, but let's be real. Some wellness trends are hard to stick with. Taking shots of apple cider vinegar? No thanks. Swallowing giant vitamins? Not for me. Goalie Nutrition is wellness made easy and delicious with their chewable gummies. From apple cider vinegar for digestion support to ashwagandha for stress relief, Goalie's gummies fit effortlessly into your routine. They're made with high quality ingredients, taste amazing, and are packed with essential B vitamins to help you feel your best every day. Apple cider vinegar has been used for centuries as a traditional remedy for digestion and gut health, now in a convenient gummy form. More than just ACV, from ashwagandha for stress relief, plus they're packed with essential vitamins, organic ingredients, and no artificial nonsense. No mixing, measuring, or mess. Just grab, chew, and conquer your day. Made for every lifestyle with a formula that works for you. Plus, they're made in the USA. Loved worldwide. So head to goalie.com now and get America's number one ashwagandha and apple cider vinegar gummies at an exclusive 42% off. Give them a try, risk-free. Backed by their money-back guarantee. Because wellness should be simple, effective, and delicious. Don't wait. Visit goalie.com today.
Your head. So, like, every cast member comes down, they're like, holy... Do you cuss on this?
Oh, yeah, whatever you want.
Okay. They're always like, holy shit, you're actually making the drinks? And I'm like, yeah, what did you think? And they're like, well, we thought that, like, someone else made the drinks, and you just, like, talk to us. I'm like, no, I have to. Like, when I first got there, I remember Ilan Gale, one of my favorite producers in the world. He no longer works for the show, but he makes a million other shows. It was, like, kind of, like, his brainchild with me. Like, we kind of created this whole thing. And he was like, I want you to be like the bartender on Love Boat. Like, I've got this whole idea for you. But I remember the first day before we started filming, he brought me down to the bar. He brought all the producers down. And he goes, okay, Wells is the bartender. He's going to wear this stupid shirt, okay? And he had, like, employees there. And he's like, okay, where does Wells go get the ice? And they were like, okay. And he's like, hielo. Where does he get the hielo? And they're like, oh. So he's like, show me where you get the ice. And he's like, okay, where are the glasses? And they show me where you get the glasses. And it's, and it was like, where do you wash the glass? Like, I had to, like, learn everything.
So you're a real bartender there.
Yeah, for sure. Like, if I break a glass into ice, I have to burn all that ice and then go get more ice.
They dock, like, it out of your pay.
Oh, yeah. And, like, what's really – you'll never see. It's so funny. Like, the true greatness of the show never gets shown. But, like, I get so mad at them. Because it's a no fault of their own, but I have a limited amount of glasses that I can keep back there because we've got sound people back there and camera guys back there, and I'm just busy back there. And I'll make them a drink and they'll leave, and then they'll come back and they won't have the cup. And I'll be like, where's the cup? And so you'll see me every about 2 hours, I have to walk around the beach, pick up all the sandy cups, go wash them. I've done like 9 seasons of this show, and I'm like their bitch.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Are you filling them up with real alcohol?
Oh,
if,
yeah.
If people want double shots, you're doing that?
So, no. My stomach's growling.
Do you want a break?
No. I've found that, and I think production has found this too, like sloppy cast members don't make good TV. It's funny because I'll watch a show back and I'll be like, I can tell they're drunk a little bit, but they're keeping it together, or I just know them pretty well. But like, you'll never see like, fuck that bitch, she stole my man. Like, that's, it's also network TV, so it's not, I'm sure ABC and Disney wouldn't love that, but it doesn't make for good TV. So us getting them super sloppy is not advantageous in telling a story. Now, do I agree with that? I do not. And I'll tell you why. If I'm going to get engaged to somebody, I want to know what they're like when they get wasted. That's an important thing to know, right? Like, we were talking starting the show. Like, Wells is like, oh, yes, when he blacks out, he's a nice blackout drunk. That's an important thing to know, I think. So I've had that kind of, like, conversation of, like, I think it's important for, like, these people. Like, they're going to get engaged. They should know. But, no, I don't get them too drunk. We have kind of a system where it's like a couple drinks an hour. I have like way too much liability on me. I have like a book where I like denote how many drinks people have had. And then what ends up happening is like someone will get sick for some reason and they'll be on antibiotics, and it's like, you can't serve them drinks because of, you know, you can't drink on antibiotics. And so I have to like kind of keep track of that. And then there'll be times when people do get a little sloppy, and I'll have to be like, it's funny because for the most part, people are appreciative when I do it, but it's a hard thing to stomach when someone says, hey, I don't want to make you a drink. You're too drunk, you know? So I've gotten good at like, I'll like, you never see it on TV, but I'll be like, hey, come here. I'll be like, hey, I'm going to make you a water. Let's just chill for a second, because I don't want you to like, I don't want you to say something stupid, you know? And I'll be like, don't worry about it. Like, no, there's no cameras here or whatever. Like, just let's chill for a second. Most of the time they're like, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Like, you're getting a little loose. But then sometimes, and it's usually people that are assholes and I hate, will be like, fuck you, make me a drink. And then I'm like, okay, buddy.
You're getting a double. Yeah. Speaking of getting sick in Mexico,
yeah,
you recently went and got Montezuma's Revenge.
Oh, I get it almost every time I go, I feel like.
I had it back in January.
Yeah.
Awful. Did you ever get the shot?
No, is there a shot?
Yeah.
That fixes it?
Yeah, they came in, they gave me a shot in my butt. In my butt.
In your boot?
I was going to say tush, and then I said butt, and I combined them.
Yeah.
So in my boot, and it makes you stop throwing up, like, immediately.
When I've had it coming out both ends.
Same.
For sure. most of the time in Mexico, though, I mean, this is maybe too much information, but Sarah came and visited me this year, and we were so good. She was there for a while. She was there for like 2 weeks. We were so good. And then right before, we rapped. We went like into town and we both got it real bad.
Oh, sharing a bathroom?
No, luckily I had two bathrooms.
Thank God.
Thank God for that. I don't know if she would have visited me if I didn't have two bathrooms. But yeah, no, it sucks. But it's also like, it's an inevitability in Mexico.
Yeah.
So.
What would you say is the most popular drink on Bachelor in Paradise?
I mean, probably tequila shots is the one that, like, anytime anything good happens, tequila shots around. Anytime anything bad happens, tequila shots. Pour one out for so-and-so who got kicked off the show. And then, I mean, margaritas are obviously a big one. I think that tequila pineapple is one that, like, is just stands the test of time. Every season there's like a weird drink that like people start like globbing onto. And then I make a drink called the Jorge Special, which is what Jorge's, the original bartender's special drink was, which is fire. And it's really easy to make. It's vodka, soda, splash of Sprite or like lime Fanta, whatever they got there. And then you cut up some cucumbers and put that in there. And then garnish with a little bit of lime. It's so refreshing, and it's so hot there. You know, it's 100 degrees. It's also monsoon season, so it's, like, really muggy. And so that drink's, like, really, really refreshing. Whereas, like, drinking margaritas all day gets a little bit of that like, you know, that feeling right there in the back of your jaw. So that one, I'll make it for everybody. And then by the end of it, everyone's drinking that drink.
Right.
Yeah.
The people need your own alcohol.
What do you mean?
We need the Wells brand of liquor.
Yeah, I know. I've told my manager that a million times. Like, the fact that we haven't...
That's what we're sleeping on.
No kidding. Well, and every year, too, we did... It wasn't this year, and it might not have been last year. It might have been two seasons ago or three seasons ago. We were sponsored by Heineken.
Oh, great.
And I was like, nothing says Mexico like a German beer. Like, why isn't Corona sponsoring this? Like, this makes no sense to me. Like, why don't we have, you know, George Clooney's tequila company? Like, would you like some of George Clooney's tequila? Like, I can make the ad in my sleep. But I'm not in part of the ad department at ABC, so.
Did you have to learn to make any drinks?
Yeah, I was a waiter and I was a bartender in college and then out of college because I was moonlighting at a radio station and still waiting tables to, like, make ends meet. But then I worked as a radio host for, like, 10 years and stopped making drinks. So when I went back, when I started doing the job, I went online and, like, did, like, online or whatever, and I did one season of it. And I was like, I'm not quite where I think I need to be. So I actually did a bartender class here in LA. It was when I was, like, still secretly dating Sarah, I think. And there's a place, like, on Colfax that, like, by the police department that I went to. And, yeah, I went and did it's funny because I did the entire class, before you have like a graduation day where you like have to like make all the drinks for like the main boss, and I had to leave to go film like a day beforehand, so I never got to graduate. But if you find them online, they like promote me. They're like, Wells Adams had to go do this show and like learned all the drinks from us, and I was like, I never got this diploma. I should get that, like, an honorary doctorate. You know,
it's really funny.
Yeah.
What do you think that you learned from The Bachelor that you brought into your own marriage?
Oh, that's a good question. I've gotten very good at this. So as the bartender, I'm really a therapist, right? So everyone just comes to me with their problems. And sometimes you just need to figure out what people really want from someone listening to their problems. Sometimes they want you to come up with solutions to said problem. And sometimes they just want you to be angry with them. And I have found that 9 times out of 10, my wife, when she comes to me with problems, she does not want solutions. She just wants me to be pissed off with her. And so, and that's a really hard thing for, I think, for guys to do, because guys are very pragmatic and it's like, okay, well, here's the problem, here's the solution. And women are, you know, more emotional beings, I think, than guys. I think they're just more emotionally evolved. And so I've learned to be like, yeah, fuck Sandra. Why, I can't believe that she tweeted that about you. We should do something about it, you know? Like,
it's like, well, we don't want to do anything about it. Well, not do anything.
I mean, we have to tweet back or something. I don't know. Or, like, unfollow her. What? I don't know. We got to do something. And she's like, yeah, you're right. And sometimes you just need to be angry with the person. And that's really just kind of like, I think for, at least for my wife, it's more of like, when I do that, it's like I'm hearing. To her, she's like, he hears me. He hears what I'm upset about. Really. So yeah, maybe it's more like, instead of like giving solutions, it's listening.
Right. Do you think your level-headedness plays a factor into why people ask you to officiate their wedding?
I mean, I've only officiated one wedding.
Oh, I thought you did two.
No, it was just Joe and Serena's, but I am open for business.
Would you do anyone that you're not friends with?
Yeah, I'd probably charge them, though. Because
that should be your business. And you bartend after.
Yeah, no. that's funny, though. Yeah, when I did Joe and Serena's just like a month ago, I was like, this is my new side hustle, especially like while SAG's still on strike. Like, I can't get any new jobs anyway, so like, I'm just gonna go officiate weddings. I think the reason why Joe and Serena asked me to officiate their wedding was because for their season, there was no host. I was really the host of that entire season. We had like celebrity guest hosts that came in, but for the most part, I was doing all the rose ceremonies and then I was the host at the end. And so I think for them, it was a full circle moment of, you know, I was the bartender with Joe when he came on the first season. I gave him a lot of advice. We became really close. He came back a couple seasons later. I continued to give him and his now wife a lot of advice. It would have been weird to have like Jesse or Chris officiate that, because they weren't the hosts when that happened, you know. And also, knowing Joe and knowing Serena, they wanted it to be like a really fun, funny wedding. And of course, like, I lean towards the comedy side of things. So they were like, I think we're in good hands with Wells doing it. But I had a really fun time doing it. Like, it was a beautiful ceremony. Not for anything I did, but like just what they put together. And then, yeah, I'm not nervous about, like, obviously, like, I have no problem speaking in microphones and stuff, or being on TV. So I wasn't nervous about doing that at all. And it's a weird thing of like, when you first do a wedding and everyone finds out this is your first time, they're like, are you nervous? Yeah. Which is a dick thing to say to somebody, because then you're like, because if they are nervous, they're gonna be like, fuck, everyone knows that I'm nervous, you know, whatever. And I was like, no, I'm not nervous, this is me fun. Like, I've got a book that I'm reading out of, you know, like, how can I really screw this up? And then I was up there, you know, at the altar. Joe walks down, and I flash back to my wedding, seeing my wife turn the corner and come down and start. I started crying at my wedding, not at Joe's. And I was transported back to that moment of like, oh, this was the most important day of my life. I remember that. I remember like the effect it had on me, seeing her dad walk her down the aisle, looking around at all the people who love me and support me and like just showering me with love. And I was like, oh no, this is the most important day of their life. I don't want to screw this up. And that's when I got like the flop sweat, the cold sweat, being like, oh no. And that's when I got a little nervous, but then I opened with like a joke and then we were good.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Can we talk about your wedding?
Sure.
So mine just happened about a month ago.
Yeah.
Were you nervous about anything on your wedding day?
I was nervous about some guests that were coming, because I know that their liabilities, which they turned out to be. But I think that's always fun when you got some wild cards in there. The things that I was worried about was, I think I wanted, I am a softie. I get emotional very easily. And I knew that like my vows were, they were funny, but then they were like really, really touching. And I knew I was gonna, like, I was worried about getting through my vows.
Did you read them in front of everybody?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm also so competitive. I was like, I need to be better than Sarah's.
Right, you know? Obviously.
Like, I need everyone to know that, like, I'm better at this than she is. So I was nervous about that. And then we really didn't have anyone that was, like, emceeing our wedding or kind of, like, in charge because we were that thing for everyone. So we had kind of, well, it, me mainly, but we had written kind of like a long kind of script. You know, you have to do a big speech at the rehearsal dinner, thank everybody. You got to do kind of a big speech at the welcome party and everything, you know, thank you so much for coming in, da 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 da. And then you have your vows, which are important. And then, you know, after, like, before you do the first dance or whatever it is, you kind of need to speak to everybody. And I had written kind of this long monologue for both Sarah and I, and it was like a lot of yuck yucks and, you know, funny bits and stuff. And so I was a little nervous about making sure that we were able to pull that off really well, which we did a great job. It was fine. But that's what I was kind of nervous about. And yeah, other than that, I was just excited to do it. Like, it was a beautiful place. Everyone was there. Oh, I was nervous about the price tag. That's something I was very nervous about.
Were there any crazy add-ons afterwards?
Yes, of course. I don't even, like, whatever our budget was, Mindy Weiss laughed at us and then was just like, we're gonna really have a great wedding, guys. We're like, okay, it's fine.
Our wedding day was the day of the hurricane and the earthquake. So we had to get tents, and then when you get tents, you have to get a gutter so that the rain doesn't just land on the dance floor, and then you have to get a chandelier because now it's dark under there, and it just kept adding on and on and on and on and on.
Did it even still rain, though?
Yeah, thank God, kind of. There is one really cool moment of us walking down from the house, and we're being covered by an umbrella, and, like, we look like it's our day.
Yeah.
And so I'm very thankful for that photo, and I was like, I wanted one photo that was, like, a memory of the day, and that was it for me. So I was happy that everything worked out beautifully anyway.
Yeah. It's a stressful day for sure.
Not as much for the groom.
Yeah.
Do you think that?
The only thing was I was hungover. So I was just like, I'm puffy. And that was my thought. The vanity in me. And it was funny. She, like, you can see, like, my ring goes on and off pretty easily. She could not get this thing on my hand. And I remember being like, whoa, I'm puffy today. That was something that I was, like, nervous about.
Damn it, Wells, why did I drink last night?
Yeah. And, of course, I was in, like, this, like, super tailored suit where I was like, oh, I gotta suck it in.
Could you fit in it today?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I have a really nice tux and a really nice suit, which is my wedding suit. That's it. I've just repurposed them. Over and over again. I think it's bonkers when people are like, I got to go buy a new suit. I'm like, no, I have one. This is my advice to everyone listening. You only need one really good suit. You can just change the shoes and shit, you know?
Yeah.
And it, you know, mine's Gucci. So, like, anytime anyone's like, is that the same suit? Yeah, motherfucker, it's Gucci, though. Well, I'm like, what am I going to wear the... you know, the Men's Warehouse one to this? No, thank you.
Did Sarah go with you to the suit fitting?
No, I didn't let her see it because I was like, I can't see what your dress looks like. You don't get to see what my suit looks like. But I remember I sent it to her team, you know, her fashion team, being like, just so you know, this is what it looks like. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's a good suit.
Do you ever want to explore other reality shows like Dancing with the Stars or Special Forces?
No. I mean, I was on Dancing with the Stars, but I was only on it for one dance with Joe like a couple years ago, and I hated it. Like, I am...
The dancing aspect?
Like, here's the thing. I think I would do Dancing with the Stars, but I would be like, okay, let me know 6 months in advance because I'm going to go take dancing classes. I'm going to get really good at this. And then I'll do it.
Episode one's going to be insane for me.
I said, I'm the most competitive person. Like, I was an athlete growing up. I played sports in college. Like, me being bad at something, especially on a grand stage like that, would absolutely kill me.
Do you play pickleball?
Yes.
You good?
I am pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. I played, do you want to know, I played in a lot of golf pro-ams. I'm a pretty good golfer, but I played in this one in Dallas with the Champions Tour. So it's like all the old PGA players now play in this thing called the Champions Tour. And pickleball is so huge that they had a pickleball tournament coinciding with the golf tournament. And so they hit me up and they were like, hey, would you be interested in playing this pickleball tournament? We're selling tickets to it. We're going to have stands and everything. And, you know, some professional tennis players are going to be there playing it. And I was like, well, I'm not a professional tennis player, but I would love to go. Hell yeah, I'll go do that. So it was me and this hockey player who's a goalie versus Marty Fish, who I don't know if you know who that is, but he used to be the Davis Cup captain. He is one of the best American tennis players we've ever had. And John Isner, who is, I shit you not, 6'10 or 6'11, professional tennis player, one of the best tennis players America's ever produced.
How do you get it around him on the pickleball court?
You don't.
You can't.
And I was like, we're playing them? Like, split us up. Like, this is ridiculous. And I played well. And I got absolutely hosed. So, I don't know, weird sojourn into, you asked about pickleball.
Yeah. So you have another show, yeah. Best in Dough.
Yeah.
How is filming that versus doing Bachelor in Paradise?
So much easier.
Because you're on a closed set?
Yeah, and it was just, so here's the thing, like, Best in Dough, I loved it. We made 10 episodes in 10 days. Like, that's insane to me. And so.
And can you explain to people who may not be familiar, what is it?
So Best in Dough is, it's unfortunate because Hulu pulled it recently. Hopefully it's going to come back. But it was a cooking competition show where it was just pizza makers, right? So I was the host of it, and I was also a judge. And then we had another judge by the name of Daniele Uditti, who is the owner, head chef, and proprietor of Pizzana, which is a kind of a famous chain here in Los Angeles. And it's going, I think they've got one in Dallas coming up soon, and it's kind of going everywhere. He's from Italy, like, he's the best. And then we had like a rotating cast of celebrity judges that came in. And effectively, every week we would have a theme. So like one week we had nonas or grandmas from the old country, and they would come in and make old style pizza. One week we had barbecue pit masters come in and make barbecue pizza. One week we had, you know, mothers and daughters, and they'd come in and make their pizza. One week we had, you know, college kids who, you know, make pizza in their dorm room and whatever, and they come and make pizza. And there's two cooks. It's kind of similar to a lot of cooking shows where, like, we did this thing called the out-of-the-box challenge where I'd come in and be like, guess what? Whatever you think you're going to do, you're not doing it now. And, like, give them a wild card, like, weird cook and, like, make them do it. You know, like, deconstructed pizza or dessert pizza or something like a viral TikTok sensation cooking challenge pizza. And then, of course, then the next round would be a traditional just, like, let's make some pizzas, and then we would judge it, and then if you were the winner, you won a bunch of money. And, you know, it was so much fun to make. I just got to eat pizza every single day. Did I gain a lot of weight in 10 days? Yes, I did. A lot of carbs were going into this body. But it was so much fun to do. It was truly wonderful, too, because Daniele, who's, like, not tarnished by Hollywood yet, would at the end of each week, he would make pizzas for the entire set for everybody. We'd have a pizza party. It was the most fun I've ever had on set. Sorry, Bachelor in Paradise, but it was just, like, the best. And also, it's like, for a show like that, it's, okay, walk in, hit your mark. Here's a teleprompter. All right, when you get to that, turn to this. There's your mark. There's camera two. Talk to them. Okay, turn around. We didn't get it right. Do it again. You know, like, it's so easy. That stuff's so easy to me. Very cut and dry. Whereas Bachelor in Paradise is, okay, go down there. Figure it out. I don't know.
Deal with people's feelings.
Yeah.
Help them find love.
And of course, there will be like a little bit of understanding or directive, like, hey, so-and-so is really sad and they really value your opinion. We're going to send them over to you. Cheer them up. You know, like, try to make them feel better. Because that happens a lot. Like we were talking about Joe. Joe wanted to leave the show, the season that he got engaged on. He wanted to leave the show, like, on the third episode, whatever. And it was a lot of me being like, please don't leave. And it was selfishly. I was like, don't leave because I actually like talking to you. You're a normal human being. And so, yeah, in that scenario, it's just me just trying to be helpful to them, you know, and the days are a lot longer. You know, I'll go and film a lot of times. It'll be like, all right, we need your call is 3 p.m. And then I'll wrap at midnight, or my call is at 10 and my wrap is 4 a.m. Like, it's crazy long hours. And then I'll watch it back and be like, I'm not even on this show. Like, I was there that entire time cleaning glasses, giving people advice, like dabbing tears away from eyes. And I'm not even on the show, man. So, but it's a totally different beast, you know? And I become super, I'm like ingrained in the show, which is kind of cool. Like, I have, you know, whenever you're making any type of television show or movie, it's all about stakes. And you need to know what the stakes are for the audience to actually give a shit. It's funny for me because I'm a perfect, like, I'm the perfect audience barometer because I have stakes in these people's lives now. Like, I'm like, oh no, so-and-so is heartbroken because the so-and-so's on a date. Like, I feel so bad. Like, how do we fix this? Whatever. And so it's a good barometer of, like, what's going to be a really good episode or what's going to be a really good relationship to follow and stuff. But it's fun that I'm like ingrained in the creation of that show. And like, I'm really a part of it, even though like I'm not going on dates and all that kind of stuff. I have feelings towards it now in terms of like a pizza show. I like the cast, but like the stakes for me aren't very high. You know, it's, you're the winner. You know? All right. Next week on Best in Dough.
Yeah.
So it's completely different, but
does a show like that reach out to you because of your hosting capabilities?
What's one of the things that's really frustrating about what I've done to my career is I was a host. Like, I was a radio host, which is, being a radio host is much harder than being a television host. Sorry to every television host out there, but I've done both. Radio host, there is no, like, all right, let's do a pickup. We got to get something right. Like, when the red light goes on, like, you got to do it. You got to hit it. You got to, you know, make sure you're saying every commercial the correct way and teasing the next song and like hitting the post in the song and all that stuff. There's a TV, you can do it all over again. Even on like a show like Dancing with the Stars, that's they can redo that kind of stuff, even though it's like kind of live, you know, pseudo live. So what's frustrating for me is that like people are like, oh my God, you're a host. It's like, I was a host for 12, 14 years doing 3 different radio shows. This bartender thing is like not really what I am, you know? So yeah, it's been a little bit of a struggle of like re-explaining my career to all the studios out there.
In a perfect world, what would be the next opportunity for you that you'd be so stoked to be part of?
I'd like to do a game show. I would love to do a game show because that would lend to my sensibilities of like comedy first and then like, you know, and then also create the creation of the show. I would like to do another dating show. I like my role on Paradise a lot. The problem is that, you know, a couple years ago, I really was the host of that show. And so I really wanted to be the host of that show. But when you become the host, then all of a sudden being the bartender, I don't know if you could do both. I always said like, let me do both. But you need, there's the guy that greets everybody and then the guy that's like, tell me your problems. All right, what's going on? You know? So it'd be hard to do both, but I would like to host a reality show that would be like in the dating realm. But I would still always love to do Bachelor in Paradise just because I like being a part of the creation of that show and being like woven into the fabric of everyone's story, you know? Like, case in point, like, I just married Joe and Serena because I was kind of woven into their love story, you know? Or Dean and Kaylin, I just went to their wedding. I was there when they were on the beach fighting and breaking up and getting back together and all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, I mean, like, Pie in the Sky, eventually, and I don't know, it might be dying soon, but I always wanted to have my own like talk show, like late show kind of a thing. And I would love to do that. And I also like to write a lot too. So I like to do like the behind the scenes stuff as well. Right. Yeah.
It's almost like your podcast though, because you are the host.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know how many people would actually listen to that in comparison to like, you know, a network TV show.
Right.
But yeah, you're right.
Would you say it's easier for you to be the bartender or the cast member on the show?
Ooh.
Because those are two different beasts.
Totally different things. That's a good question. The bartender's easier for me just because I know that, like, I can't get myself into really any trouble, you know? When I was a cast member on the show, I dated three girls in like 5 days. I was like, it was my, I think it was my audition to be the bachelor, see how he can handle it. I didn't handle it very well because I was really nervous about hurting people's feelings. Because you know, when you do it, like, you got to choose somebody or choose nobody or whatever. And I remember just being like, I'm not the guy that like is fine with hurting people's feelings. So I had a really hard time with that. Which is why I wasn't the bachelor, I think. Whereas on Paradise as the bartender, I really am never there to hurt anyone's feelings. I'm there to like kind of build people up or make people feel better, or warn them like, you might look bad. Let's stop doing that. And so, yeah, I think it's much easier to be the bartender.
That's so cool. You become the voice of reason.
Yeah, but then put me in an interview chair and I'll make fun of you guys, for sure.
Behind your back, I'm a real dick.
Absolutely. Well, it's something that I tell to your face, 100%. Like I don't even know if it'll air, but like there's a cast member named Braden, of whom I like a whole lot. But he wears like kind of like wacky shit, right? He's got like rubber ducky earrings and like a stupid hat, and he's wearing a scarf. We're in Mexico. Don't need a scarf. You look like an idiot, you know? Were you like a 1940s like test pilot and you crashed here and you still have the scarf on? Like, what's going on? And so I would try out all my bits on them, making fun of them, and then be like, hey, put me in an interview chair. Let me do some of this stuff. So they know I'm doing it. But yeah, for the most part, I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings.
Is the intro of the show everyone's own creativity?
Yes, for sure. And so I did a thing today.
Great video.
And it was a little harsh, but like, here's the other thing. I've seen the first episode. Like, I know who looks good and looks bad, so I'm not gonna be mean to people who look bad. I'm not gonna pile on or whatnot. But yeah, it's like whatever their shtick is, you know. So like, there's a girl named Greer who like loves tea. She's about big on tea time. Which is so stupid and so funny. And so, of course, she's drinking tea. But it's also, like, double meaning because she's, like, sipping the tea, like, you know, whatever. So it's a good one. It's also very obvious, you know? So I actually liked hers. But then the ones that were, like, people are, like, just jump around. Like, you didn't even do anything. You just jumped. What was that? So, yeah, it's a little bit of – some people have a – thing. Like, there's a girl named Kat who like does cat faces, and so we put like cat ears on her, so that was like her thing. For me, I've done so many seasons that we've run out of things I can do. Like this year was like, what are we gonna do? So yeah, you definitely get to choose like your own story there.
You gotta learn some of those bartender tricks.
So it's funny, when I went to go do that bartender school over there on Colfax, I went there for that. Like, I was like, I'm going to be Tom Cruise in Cocktail. Like, here we go. Cocktails and Dreams. Here we go. And I get there the first day, the teacher goes, all right, I'm going to teach you guys how to be bartenders. I'm not going to teach you any of that bullshit throwing things around. I was like,
of course.
No. That's the only reason why I'm here, dude.
Damn it.
But I've done a bunch of those. I think those in the early seasons where I spun my shaker and, you know, whatever. Then we've done the silly ones. My favorite one to this day still is Chris Harrison hitting a ball like a golf shot out of the sand and it landing in my cup and it splashes all over me. And why I love it so much is because it was the hardest thing to do. It took us like the better half of a day because you had to have like a sound guy or like an AD or whatever, like throwing a golf ball at me and trying to hit it in the cup. And so like, and I've got to hold the cup because I've got to like, I've got to hold the cup. So I've got to lift it up and go, you know, meh, whatever. So I've got to hold the cup, and I swear to God, there are so many times where he just hit my hand, like hit my knuckle. I was like, fuck this. My knuckle's like swollen. If you look at it, like, you can see my hand's like swollen. And like four times we break the cup, and we're like, we can't do that. And so it took forever to do, and it turned out like the best one we've ever done. Yeah. But yeah, those intro things are fun.
Yeah. To wrap it up, yeah. Can you give us any sneak peeks about anything in the new season?
We have the most bachelorettes come to Paradise that we've ever had on any season. That's very interesting. Having leads in Paradise is so funny to me because they've gone from a world where they are the star to a world where you are not the star at all. There's 12 kind pseudo stars. I love that reality check. But it's also good because they all deserve to find love. We have a wedding. An actual wedding on this season, which I have been there basically from the beginning, and I think I've only been to two. So this will be my third. That's exciting.
Are you officiating?
No. Ooh. Jesse is. I know. Well, he's the host. He's got it. I'm the ring bearer. There you go. There's a sneak preview. I'm the ring bearer. And it's so funny. Jesse, I love Jesse. He's like super sweet guy, but he's a big football player. Like, that's just what he is. The man sweats like he's still like in Gainesville doing two-a-days. Like, it's just pouring out of him. And they're going to have to somehow edit around it. But watching him marry these people is just waterfall down his face. And we were all just sitting there being like, Jesus Christ. Looks like getting interrogated or something. The weddings, I'm sure they'll edit it out, you know, but it's so good, so funny. And then what else? We have a serious medical emergency that happens this year that is so freaking funny, and I shouldn't make fun of people, but we have a girl who is unable to poop for over 10 days.
IBS.
Well, no. If she had IBS, then I think she would be pooping. She is constipated. Like, she hasn't taken a crap in over 10 days, and the doctor has to come and be like, yo.
Is that an enema?
So we give her everything. We throw the sink at her trying to get this poor girl to poop.
Wow, you're a bartender and a doctor.
No. There's a doctor that comes in there.
I'm not doing it.
The doctor does this amazing thing, and so I'm not spoiling anything because it's in the teaser, but he comes in and he goes, you have a poop baby inside your body, and if you don't deliver the poop baby by sunrise tomorrow, you have to leave Paradise, which I think is the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard in my entire life because I've never heard a doctor denote time by sun. Like, he's not like, if your eczema doesn't clear up by sundown tomorrow, take this medication. No one's ever said that. But he goes, if you don't have this poop baby by sunrise tomorrow, what kind of doctor is this guy? And my favorite thing that's ever happened on the show, I think, is seeing a doctor literally say those words. So yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. It's a good season. I've seen the first episode.
Golden Bachelor.
Yeah.
Have you seen that yet?
No. It's funny. I got sent a screener for it, and I didn't watch it. And the reason why I didn't is because we're going to like an event tonight to watch both premieres. I have talked to a lot of producers who are very excited about it, and I think it'll be great. And because I'll tell you why. I need it to be great, and I'll tell you why I need it to be great. Because I need them to have a Golden Bachelorette, so then they have to have a Golden Bachelor in Paradise. Because there's nothing I want more than a bunch of just old, sweaty, what I can only assume are Republican coming to my bar and just like saying the weirdest stuff. I just imagine it's going to be like a lot of like, have you heard about Flat Earth? Like, well, every time you go home to like for Thanksgiving, you talk to some weird uncle and they're like, well, let me tell you about QAnon. You're like, whoa, 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 this is going to be weird. But I want that so badly to be behind the bar and be like, all right, so tell me about Q. What's going on? Really, huh? Wow, JFK's coming back. Interesting. This is good. I want this so bad for me.
Yeah.
Not for money or fame, but for me. Because I want to be in an interview chair and be like, guys, learn a lot about QAnon. JFK's coming back, all right? Trump is the president, apparently. Biden's a skinwalker. It's a lot of good stuff I'm learning.
It's really funny. Cool. Well, Wells, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Bachelor in Paradise comes out tonight.
Yep.
Well, can you link your stuff? All your socials?
It's all at Wells Adams on Instagram, TikTok, X? Are we calling it X? Whatever.
Yeah, Twitter, I guess we're calling it X.
Twitter was. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Lightweights, out. Thank you.
Yeah.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.